subject that I don't like to relate. I said, man, fish pie, if you got good bait, I'm going fishing. My mama going fishing, baby.
Yeah, yeah, going fishing. That's what we like the idea of. Leaf's here. It's time for a fish report. Hey, Leaf.
How you doing, Deb?
You been fishing?
Oh, you know it.
I figured. So when we left last week,
mm-hmm.
I feel like this is like a radio theater of the mind. You are going to go on a little outing. You're
yeah.
going to go up to, I don't know how much information you I know it's kind of secret a little bit.
Yeah. It's somewhere in the Twisp River headwaters.
Okay.
One of those tributaries.
And you were going for gold.
I was. I was mining for a different type of gold. Gold with fins on it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, to get to these guys, it's a baton death march. And
really?
Yeah, this is probably one of the two I know of that are the easiest. I mean, it's hard to use that word in conjunction with any golden trout hike, though. So this one's only about seven and a half, you know, miles up there.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 2,000 feet is just 2 miles. So you're kind of
yeah, that's,
going
that's
straight
a steep
up.
Grade, yeah.
And it's super bushwhacky while you're doing that. You're getting cut up, and you're stepping over, climbing over stuff, and
mm-hmm.
in some cases, tripping a couple ground hornet nests.
That happens, huh?
Oh, man. Oh, we, yeah, my buddy Jesse and I, we tripped two different ground hornet's nests, and unfortunately, he's the only one who bore the brunt of some of those attacks. He got stung in his legs
Jesse.
A few times, and yeah, the second one, I could only think to say, come on, and I darted to the side, and he's just kind of standing there with a cloud of bees in front of him, and luckily, he managed to matrix his way out of that one, though. So.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, the good thing about this is, I'm guessing that when you get there, the payoff is like supernatural.
Oh, so worth it. You know, I'm kind of like a stable horse in that last mile before the stable or before the goal. I'm just trucking. My, you know, heart rate's up in there in the 160s, 180s, and I'm just pushing.
Yeah.
Want to get there so bad. Just see those rings. And sure enough, finally got there, got over the hall. And
what time of day did you get in?
Oh, geez. I would bet, see, we left the trailhead about 6:30 or, yeah, about that time. So we probably got up there about 10:30.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It was, we took our time with that one. I like to, because you're going up a trail at first, for quite some ways, you get kind of a chance at about 5 miles to take a nice long break and get ready for that last bit. So
mm-hmm.
you kind of eat lunch and, you know, maybe put on some brush pants or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
so we kind of took our time of it. You could probably do it faster, but I'm not in that kind of shape right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, no point in hurrying. I just kind of trying to imagine the time of day you were pulling in.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't early, but the fish were up on the rise and cruising just a foot off the bank in some cases.
Really?
Yeah, it was outstanding. I got my first one in about 4 minutes. But, you know, it kind of led us to think it would be super easy like that the whole time.
Well, maybe tell folks a little bit about these golden trout. Where are they from? How'd they get there? What do they like? How are they different?
Well, they are the California golden trout.
Mm-hmm.
So they originate, you know, one of the bigger groups is in the Kern River Valley. There are quite a few different streams there that would have had them. Some of them have been bred out through interbreeding with hatchery rainbow trout. There's also Onchorhynchus chrysogaster, which is down in north central Mexico, right below the border there, and they call that one the Mexican golden trout. And it's you know, much older. I mean, every time you drop down you know, however many degrees there, and they get like tens of thousands of years older and more distinct from one another. But that one's pretty golden too. The thing with golden trout though is really that they you know, they fill that niche of fish that can exist in just super skinny, tough to live in water, and not only fill that niche, but thrive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just beautiful.
How did they get in those lakes up there?
Well, these lakes, that's all through, you know, just volunteers working really hard. I know a lot of the guys that have done these, and this one in particular, and they just backpack in a bottle of water on their back with, you know, 200-500 fish in there. And they do that however many years and try to keep at least a few of them in there.
Mm-hmm. And they're overwintering now, and they've been established
uh-huh.
for some time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, they seem to, you know, the first time I went to this lake, it looked like we came in on this catastrophic-looking event. My friend Matt and I arrived to what looked like the Italian ice cone of death. It was just like all the snow had dropped off this huge face and hit the water and made like a midwinter tidal wave, which just like took all the top sheet of ice off the lake and threw it on the other side, like playing cards, all stacked up the size of cars and stuff.
Wow.
And, you know, judging from all the rocks and logs and debris and snow in there, we thought it was dead. You know, no fish would be in there. And we went back up again, you know, Thomas and I, 2 years ago, and found that those fish that I saw, judging by the size, would have actually made, a few of them made it through that. So
I'll be darned.
They're super hardy. And the thing that really surprises me is they're just like two or three small pools in the creek before it goes underground below the lake. Mm-hmm. And right now, the one is maybe 10 feet wide and 6 inches deep. So they're somehow going to get through the winter, because I've seen fish in there that are like an inch long. And these two, that was really cool, were like 12 and almost 13 or 14 inches in this tiny pool. And I can tell that they're spawning in there from those little one-inchers or, you know, the variation in size from 1 inch to all the way up to 12, 13 inches. So they somehow get by and really actually grow big still tiny little creek.
Huh. So not only are they tough guys, they're pretty guys.
Good
looking fish.
Oh, so pretty. They, you know, I think I've heard it's that they need to be above like 5,000 feet to take on their full coloring. Mm-hmm. And this lake is at right about 6,000. So, you know, this was the best coloring I've seen in any of these fish in the lake.
Fine. So how'd the fishing go?
You know, it started out, like I said, looking like it was going to be a cakewalk. And then it, you know, my first couple, two or three did come fairly easy.
Yeah.
And then we found that they were definitely telling each other about us. I feel like there was maybe, you know.
Yeah. Hey, there's some strangers here.
Yeah, they're like, watch out for that thing that looks like, you know, nothing else we've seen. Stop eating it, you know. So you kind of had to start getting down into more natural presentation, had to be a lot stealthier. At first, they would come if they heard the bug hit the water just to see what it was. And then they started hearing bugs hit the water. They would run away from the sound. So,
oh, wow.
I feel like maybe there was only about 50 of the big fish left in there. So we almost, you know, caught half and then spooked the other, or, you know, caught a third and spooked the other two-thirds of them, I think, you know, respectively.
Yeah, but they are cautious up there. I mean, they're essentially wild.
Yeah, well, you know, they don't act like, they are from a hatchery, but they haven't been worked with to develop traits like they did with the rainbow trout. So they're not like a domesticated rainbow trout. They still act very wild. They might as well be wild, yes, because they were put in there at like, 60 fish to the pound is what they usually go for, which is going to be about inch and a half long, just really small. So they just, their experience in a hatchery was hatching from an egg, being fed for, you know, a summer, and then put somewhere.
Yeah.
And in this case, they were shipped up from California as eggs to the Chelan hatchery.
All right. Well, sounds like a great adventure.
Oh, super fun. You know, I'd like to tell you more about it. I'd like to tell you how to find out about them. But the WDFW doesn't actually list them on their stocking reports, and that's just kind of part of the allure. You kind of have to figure out for yourself through maybe one of your best buddies that's really been out in the hills a lot, or, you know, maybe hold for ransom some family member of a local fish biologist. I don't know. It's out there. People try to talk about it on the backcountry forums and stuff. I'm not much on that. You know, I just, it took me a while to figure out where they were myself, and it's just a fun thing to do to try to collect a little bit of that knowledge yourself.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I totally agree. So, as tantalizing as that is, I guess we should also talk about the river, or what there is of it. Boy, I tell you, driving to work today.
Oh man,
not much.
It's
river
a little trickle,
showing,
isn't it?
Well, up where I started,
I bet up your way.
It's really looking pretty skinny.
You know what? I last looked, it was at 400 and some, pretty low. It's we finally, you know, we were hovering just above that 60-year average so nicely until right in the middle of my backpack trip there, and I came down from that to find we spiked right under it. So, you know, the water has been staying fairly cool up here in the upper half. I imagine down in that lower half, it's probably just super warm. I'm pretty much done fishing anything south of Gold Creek for the water temperatures. And I'd be fishing, you know, just basically between Winthrop and Gold Creek. Still giving those fish myself a little bit of a break up in the Winthrop to Twisp stretch. They've had a long summer, a lot of visitors. But, you know, still great fishing out there. We're going to go from the Golden Stones and hoppers being the big thing. They're slowly going to slow down now, and you're going to start seeing these big October caddis start flying around anytime.
Okay.
And so we'll kind of dovetail into that bug as our dry fly and some of those nymphs later on when it gets really chilly. And, you know, don't forget, it's a small window here. Get your chance to get up into the backcountry. You can always find out some good stuff from the folks up at the ranger station. Mm-hmm. And the lowland lakes with these nice cool nights, finally going to be time to get back on some of those. So,
oh, good.
Lots of options open to you right now at this time of the year.
And you think the river is still available?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, I mean, I know it looks crazy and low, but that's what it does at this time of the year. And as long as the temperatures are okay, that's the most important factor, really. I've found the fish are still fighting really good. So I don't feel like they're getting that warm yet. And now, lo and behold, in this last couple of days, we've just had this like 10-degree cool down. So I think it came right on time. I would keep on fishing, and I think it's going to be good and, you know, as good for them as it can be. Okay. If anybody needs any more information or would like to check out the podcast, check us out at flyfishersproshop.com or send me an email at metalfishingadventures@gmail.com or give me a call at 509-429-7298. Enjoy the end of your summer, y'all. Take care of each other. Get that fish right on. I went on down to my favorite fishing hole. And I got myself a pole in line. On a 9-pound catfish on the bottom. Came I got it. Took them home. Mama, my supper time. Sing men and fish pipes. If you got good bait, here's a little.